We're going to start with a nice word in Parashas Nusay. The Peliyoyet in a cipher Elif Hamugayin. He says an interesting word in Parashas Nusay. We find the mitzvah of Birchas Kahanim. Right, the Kahanim bench Klal Yisrael. He says in the Brucha we find that the Kahanim say Lebrachas Am Yisrael Be'ahava. Where do we find that Birchas Kahanim has to be done specifically Be'ahava? So he says we find, the Gemara says, that sometimes the Torah uses the shoyness of Imes Oilom. Right, Tetufos, the Gemara says, Tas Bekaspa Ishtayim, Pas Bafrika Ishtayim. The word Tetufos doesn't really have a Lushan Kodesh translation. The Torah is using other Lashoinis. We also find the Gemara that Lushan Yevuni, Korin Achas Hain. Right? Achas, one, is Hain in Lushan Yevuni, and that's why the Torah will use a Lushan of Hain. So he says that the Pusik by Birchas Kahanim says that you should tell B'nai Aharon, I'm Koisavachas B'nai Yisrael, Umor Eluham. So the Umor, Lushan Svardi, is a Hava. Umar lehem, the bruchas of Birchas Kahanim should be given over bi'ahava, and that's why the Kahanim, when they make the brucha, they say the Lebrachas Am Yisrael bi'ahava. Just about everything that's given over bi'ahava is taken better. We would think that a brucha is a brucha. If the Hashem is giving the koyach, the Kahanim, to give bruchas, so we'll just say the brucha, and Hashem is the one benching them. But no, the way to give over anything like that is specifically bi'ahava. When something is given bi'ahava, it's taken well, it's given well, and it takes effect. When it comes to chinuch habunim, when it comes to anything that we want to relate to children, whether it's a chinuch message, or it's a good feeling, or it's an inyan of a masoira, or even if it's an inyan of discipline, if it's given over bi'ahava, and the general relationship is a relationship of ahava, then obviously everything is taken better. There are children that are easy to love, and there are children that are not so easy to love. And as we all know, the ones that are harder to love are the ones that need it more, and the ones that depend on it more. And it's just something you take very seriously. I was talking to a mashgiach, he used to be a mashgiach, in the yeshiva, and he said something interesting. He said he was once by a meeting of mashgiachim or magachirim before the nuzman, and the Rosh Yeshiva said something to the mashgiachim and the magachirim. He says, you know, whenever you're going to have a problem with a bucher in the middle of the zman, you can start looking for who to talk to, which mimcha, which expert, sending the parents for help. It's always going to come back that you should be more loving and more caring and more connecting and more emotional with this child who's struggling. So I'm telling you now, you don't have to wait until you run into the problem, until you find the right person and the right help, and you get the message that, oh, this child needs more love and attention. I'm telling it to you now. You can start off by giving every bucher and every talmud a lot of love and a lot of attention, and you'll see they'll all do a lot better. It's easier said than done. And sometimes it's just hard to give everyone the same amount of attention, same amount of love, or the amount that they really need. But it's clear that whenever a child is struggling, whenever you see a difficulty, part of the answer, and sometimes a lot of the answer, if not all the answer, is to make a more loving and more warm and more connecting connection. And very often that's a big part of the answer, although it seems totally unrelated. And just like Birchas Kahanim is given over bi'ahava, so much of anything is given over bi'ahava. So let me read a question and try to give some perspective over here. Okay, there by Gruen. Our 4-year-old daughter came over to my wife yesterday and told her that our 16-year-old son did something very inappropriate. Let's save the example. Let's spare the listeners the example. It's something very inappropriate. My wife approached my son, asked him about it, and he admitted that he did it because he couldn't hold himself back. Okay, so my wife told him that she will need to tell Tati. My son later said that if you're not going to ignore it, then I won't ignore it either. The next day, my daughter came over to my son and asked him if it's true that he will never do it again, and he ignored her. What's the right approach from this point on for him and for her and for us? Okay, I changed just a word or two, but basically that was the gist of the question. Something inappropriate happened. It seems that he admitted it happened and said that he couldn't hold himself back, and then he got upset that we were dealing with it and threatened that if you don't ignore it, I'm not going to ignore it either. Okay. So let me just start off by saying that, yeah, it's a sensitive situation and it needs guidance. And like I mentioned often, waiting 6 months for me to address it by Shir is not the responsible way to deal with such a situation. And whenever anyone is in a situation where something is a bit more sensitive than typical or general, you always want to make sure that you're doing the right thing and getting someone to guide you through it. It's very easy to react emotionally when people get triggered or people get afraid or people see something that they can't handle, and that's why it's even more important to get guidance. Which means sometimes we look at it like, okay, in a typical situation, things are simple, things are calm. I'll go find out what the right thing to do is because I could afford to have the liberty and the option of going to find out. But here, I have to put my foot down and react right away. In the meantime, it's much the opposite. When something's calm and simple, okay, so you could think about it. You probably won't make too big a mistake and figure out what to do on your own. Or trial and error sometimes won't be terrible. When it comes to sensitive situations where you feel that you're reacting emotionally, it's just important to stop and get guidance and get someone to help you and let you know what the right thing to do is. You'd be surprised, but even professionals, so-called professionals, or machanchim, or people who do know usually what to do when it comes to these kind of situations where they get a little afraid, then they need someone to help them through it, even if they would be able to tell someone else what the right thing to do is. One more thing that I always like mentioning whenever we discuss any of this kind of discussion is that there's no clear answer. There's no clear answer. There are clearer answers to a lot of different questions when it comes to chinuch, when it comes to shul and bias. You know, my son doesn't want to go to shul, he's 10 years old, he doesn't daven, he skips the words, he makes believe. He gets up late, he doesn't want to go to chayde. There are situations that most mechanchim, most professionals will tell you the same thing. They'll tell you the same thing, more or less. There are situations that get a little touchy, and it's interesting how people come with all different kinds of approaches, and it just goes to show that there's no real 100% straightforward answer, and you know, with Hashem's help, you try to apply the right information to the right situations with the right amount of guidance, and you get it right. So, let me just try to break it down to a few different points that I think might be helpful for this questioner and others. Mitzvah Hashem. One is, it sounds like in this case, the boy is not denying it at all, right? A 4-year-old came to say something about a 16-year-old, and he admitted that he did it. But let me just go back, because my first knee-jerk reaction as I was reading the question the first time was, a 4-year-old came to say something. Okay, take it with a grain of salt. Now, in general, when one child is saying something about the other child, it's always good to verify. It's always good, you know, to remember that even when a child is 10 or 15, he might have an agenda, he might have a reason why he's saying something. He might think he's saying the truth or whatever. And in general, you have to make sure that you're not showing your children, at least it shouldn't be obvious that you're believing one over the other, for example. But especially when it comes to a 4-year-old, I think people do put a bit too much weight sometimes on something a child says, and then it becomes a major issue because, well, he said. Well, he's 4. Yeah, but he said. Okay, it's just that's something to think about. The next thing, like I started saying, was that even if you know something happened, you have every reason to think that it really did happen, or you're pretty sure that it happened, or you even know that it happened. You even know that it happened because you watched it happen. But it's not clear to your 16-year-old that you saw it happen. For whatever reason, you don't want to tell them that you saw it happen because you shouldn't have been looking or you shouldn't have been listening, right? So sometimes people have that confidence of, well, I know it's true, so I'm allowed to accuse and come in strong with conviction that I know he did something wrong. Remember, if he doesn't know that you know, then even if he knows that he did something, but he's thinking that you don't really know, and you're still coming across this strong on me, it's because you don't trust me and you hate me. It's true. Yeah, but you don't know that it's true. You're assuming it's true. In other words, if he could assume that you're only assuming, you have to be careful how you proceed. And this is something that people very often feel like it's better if I come on strong and say, I'm sure, I know what happened, you can't lie to me. And even if he also knows the truth, but he also knows that you're accusing him because you don't trust him or because you think poorly of him and things like that, it's very, you have to be very, very careful with these things. It could work against you when you show your child clearly, well, I don't trust you. And then he just learns to hide better from you because you don't trust me anyway. For practical purposes, in his mind, he's thinking, for practical purposes, it didn't happen and you still think it happened. So I might as well do it anyway because I see you suspect me anyway. Anyway, I think that's the... So that's one issue, how to make sure that you're getting the right information. You're not saying it in a way that makes someone feel like you're just biased or think poorly of them. On the other hand, what if you bring up something and you tell your son, well, someone said something, I want to verify, is it true, is it not true, let's talk about it, what do we do? You shouldn't be naive, and you shouldn't let someone get away with it too quickly, you shouldn't let someone say, no, we just made it up, it's nothing. You have to know how to make sure that it's nothing. There are people that like to believe that it's nothing, and it's not nothing. Very often we're relieved when somebody says, no, it never happened. Oh, sure, that's great. How do you know it didn't happen? Because someone said. Just like you can't know something happened when someone said it did happen, you can't know something didn't happen because someone said it didn't happen. I think I must have mentioned the story about the Belzeruv who told the butcher that people are saying that you're selling treifa fleisch. It's not kosher. How are you doing that? And knowing the Belzeruv being a vaich, idle tzaddik who wouldn't want to hear something bad about a yid, he says, no, Rebbe, they just think so. They just think I'm selling treifa fleisch. And Belzeruv's face lit up and said, wow, that's great. I'm so happy to hear that they only think so. And this guy was relieved that he got away with it so quickly. And as he's walking out, Belzeruf calls him back, please make sure they don't think so. So it's just, you have to know how to make sure that without accusing, without jumping to conclusions, and without telling someone clearly that I do suspect you and I don't believe you, you also have to make sure that it doesn't sound like, oh, I always believe you and you can do whatever you want and get away with it and think that I'm naive and that I'll just go for any excuses. And I heard this just this past week, for example. I was talking to somebody who was trying very gently to get across a message that I know you're taking money, I know you're stealing things, I know you're doing this, I know you're lying. And every time the son would answer or give some time an excuse and wheedle his way out of it, it was like, okay, I don't want to hurt his feelings, so I let it go. You don't want to teach him that with a silly excuse he can get away with something. So this is always like the chachma, how to make sure someone doesn't feel like you're always believing bad things about me, but also not always believing that, no, it's just nothing. So, and for your own conscience, it's important to remember that even if you can't pin someone with something, and even if you don't know for sure, there's this issue of lemaichesh miboy. You have to be careful. You wouldn't send along a child with someone you don't trust, not because you know they'll do something wrong, but because you have to be careful. So part of being careful is that whenever you do hear that something happens or might happen or might have happened and people are saying things, there are the extremes. There are the people that say, wow, everyone is suspected and you can't trust anyone, and they hover over their children their whole life, and they don't let them breathe, and they don't let them play outside, they don't let them go to school or function. And then you have those who trust everyone, and whenever they do hear something that, you know, you have to be careful about going to this place or being near that person, nah, it's nothing. Life is about balance and figuring out how to keep an eye open and to be careful about information that you hear, even if you can't verify it, and be a responsible parent. In general, I would say that there's a trust issue that has nothing to do with the story you heard over here. A 16-year-old boy, and some boys are bruchshem very erlich and don't even have any nisyon in this area, let's make believe, but some do. And if we know about ourselves that ein apotropos l'arayos, right, you don't trust yourself, there's a reason why you put a filter on your own computer, even though you're the one in control of it, because you don't trust yourself. So you have to be careful that even without hearing any special reason to suspect something, it's important to know, especially with a boy who does have difficulty and he's telling you clearly, you know, that he couldn't hold himself back. But in general, you know, don't be naive. I think that's a very important moral of the story. Okay, now addressing, before we get to this practical this situation, practically where she said, he said, and what we do now, just to understand a boy who you either caught him doing something wrong, or he opened up to you that he's struggling with something, which in this case it's both, it's very important to understand a boy like this and understand what he's going through and know that it's not easy. It's not easy to be a 16-year-old boy. It isn't. And if it was hard years ago, it's even harder today. It's not easy for a 16-year-old boy to be in full control of himself. And when he's telling you this, I couldn't hold myself back, which means he's basically opening up to you that it's not easy to be in control of himself. Instead of making him sound silly, or instead of getting angry at him, I think it's important to show him, or at least in your own mind and heart, and then it's easier to verbalize, I understand, it's not easy. I think you should also commend him for being open about it and sharing with you, for being honest about the fact that he thought he did something wrong. And these are the small pieces where people overlook. You did do it? What do you mean? You couldn't hold yourself back? What do you mean you can't hold yourself? He was honest, he told you he did something. Thank you for being honest. He's being open with you about the fact that it's hard for him. Oh, wow. I see, it's hard. These are the small pieces that sometimes everything could depend on, these little things where, you know, if he feels like, you don't understand me anyway, why was I honest? Why did I open up to you? There was no reason for that. It's a shame. Another point that people don't like hearing, I think, is that you're limited with what you could do with a teenager. Which means you're limited with what you can do with anyone, you're limited with what you can do with yourself. When it comes to a child who's totally dependent on you, sometimes it's just that much easier to be in control of what happens and tell the kid, listen, you know, if you're going to do this, I won't do that. The consequences, the leverage, the dependency, it just makes it that much easier. By the time you're talking about someone who's 16, you just have to realize, I think often people don't realize, parents don't realize, that by the time you're dealing with a teenager, he's so much more on his own that you have to use the silk gloves, not just because he's struggling and you feel bad for him, but because you're not in a position where you could come across tough. Where's it going to get you if you start screaming at him and taking away his money? Does it really mean that he's going to be limited now and he's going to start behaving? Or it means that he's going to start making Shabbos Fazir and start realizing that, you know what, you don't understand me anyway and you're not helping me anyway, and I'll get money from my friend and I'll do this behind your back and I'll find out where to buy a phone and whatever else. You just have to be You have to know your limits and what you could afford to come on strong with. So aside from being understanding of a struggling teen, you have to be understanding of your position and your leverage or your lack of leverage whenever you're addressing something like this. So that's just also something I think is very important to slowly acknowledge. We don't realize when the kid grows out of the kid shoes and start getting into the adult shoes, and before you know it, you're dealing with somebody who has, you know, who's disrespectful and independent and whatever else. Okay. So now, just to get to something more practical, you ended off what's the right approach from this point on for him, for her, and for us. Let's start with for her. I don't know why I'm starting with that. Maybe just to get it out of the way. People definitely make these things into federal cases. Again, this is contrary to what others believe is the right thing to do. A four-year-old had a relatively... Again, I wasn't clear about the example for a few reasons. One, because it wasn't appropriate to repeat so clearly and graphically. And the other reason is because I don't want to start debating with people of if this is the issue, if that's the issue, when it does go into something bigger. But I think it's important to remember that, yeah, some people get carried away. Some people get carried away. You know what happened? We have to start going for therapy and we have to start making a big issue about it. And if anywhere later in life this girl ever has some kind of difficulty with anyone, we're going to assume it's because she was once abused when she was four and this happened. I think that I'm blaming every issue on this one-time episode, which was relatively... You know, it doesn't sound like it was reason for a major trauma, and it sounds from what you're saying that, you know, life goes on. I think it's important to keep it that way and not get carried away. I do think that this is something people sometimes take to the next level too early. Too early. There is such a thing, even Chazal say there's such a thing as a child getting traumatized to a point where it's literally dangerous, right? You're allowed to break down a door. Shabbos, if a child is locked behind the door, because who knows what that kind of trauma could cause. There is such a thing. And I mean to say that I'm not denying that there are situations where somebody totally, you know, gets affected for life and whatever it is, you have to take care of it. But not always. And if it looks like it's relatively okay, then it might just be. Another thing that's important in any such situation where a child tells you something happened, you have to make them feel good for telling you. Without getting obsessive about it, without telling them every morning, every night that if anyone does something to you, you can tell me, did someone do something to you? They didn't do something to you. It does get taken to the next level sometimes, this kind of... But if something did happen and she is coming to tell you, it's important to remind her that, yes, you should never be afraid. And if anyone ever does something like this to you or anything like it, you could definitely come tell us and you have nothing to be afraid about. It's important that children have that confidence that they shouldn't be afraid or bullied by somebody who tells them that they can't say something about it. And make them feel safe and protected. You could also tell her that, okay, it's nothing. It's nothing. It's important that she doesn't herself think that it's a major issue. You could tell her that it's nothing. We'll take care of it this time. But if anyone ever does something to you, you could feel free saying something about it. Let's go to him. The first thing I want to tell you about this boy is that I don't think he reacted so inappropriately, which means the fact that he couldn't handle that mommy's telling Tati and he's threatening, it's all okay. I don't think it says anything specifically and problematic, but obviously don't be afraid of his manipulation. I think it's important in general, especially here where you have to deal with it, but in general when a child says something like, you better not do that or else, the first thing, the knee-jerk reaction is, there's no threats, no manipulation. If you're going to now be afraid to do something because he said not to, you're teaching him that all you have to do is threaten that if X, then Y, and then Z, and then I won't do it. You don't want to give him that key. And this is something you don't want to give anyone, by the way. If somebody's manipulating and threatening, it doesn't mean that you should start arguing with him and say, I'm going to say, and you watch out. And Don't do that. Don't start arguing or debating or making him feel bad or getting into some power struggle where he'll feel the need to stick up for himself and show you that you're going to regret it if you don't listen to him. But just let it go. And it's going to be pretty obvious that you're not taking that too seriously. Another thing, especially talking about a child who's telling you that he's struggling. That's not easy for him. I think you want to definitely offer him some kind of help. You want to encourage him. You want to tell him, listen, I understand you. You're a boy, and it's not easy. And if he doesn't feel bad about it, he doesn't think that you're looking down at him, you could then encourage him. I think you should talk to someone about it. I think there are people that might be able to help you, because I know that you want to be good. I know that you want to do the right thing. I know you want to be more in control of yourself. And if he's being open about the fact that he's struggling, it's much easier than a lot of other people have it, where he's denying that he's struggling, and then it's harder to encourage him to get help. You can't really force a boy to get help, as much as people think they could, and they force someone to go for help, it doesn't help. But you do want to be encouraging and understanding of it, and you want to make him feel like it's understood that you have this issue, so we're not going to bash you for it, and not but, and it's very important that you do get help for it, which means you want to give that subtle message of we don't want to punish you, and if you get help for it, then it's understandable that, okay, so there's no reason to punish you. You know, you're struggling. You don't want to threaten or manipulate that if you don't go for help, we're going to punish you, but I think that's a message that I think you should be able to understand. In general, a boy of 16 years old, and again, especially a boy who is struggling, and you know it, it's very important to have a friend or a mentor. I call it friend, but it's a mentor friend, or a magachir, or a mashgiach, or someone who could talk to him and have an ongoing connection with him. Going for help once a week, or going for official help in addressing difficulties is very nice, but I think most bukhrim today, like most people today, could use somebody who's there for them and understands them and has that connection with them and could, you know, smell when things are getting difficult or deal with things before they get difficult, etc. All this is just to help him with what's going on and with what happened over here. But you definitely want to be very clear about the fact that it was completely inappropriate and unacceptable. Sometimes people mix up the validation and understanding part with it wasn't so bad, you know, he's struggling. No, it was terrible. It can never happen again. Sometimes that reaction of yours to what happened is enough. Sometimes it's enough to show a child like that's terrible. That's terrible. Once it was terrible, we could discuss what we do about it so he doesn't feel like we're here to get back at him. But don't mix the two. Not because we understand that it's hard for you. It's like, okay, so you fell through, so it's not terrible. This is terrible. And if he doesn't think it's terrible, Chas v'Shalom, it could happen again, and it could happen worse, and it could be a big, very big problem. If you do feel comfortable, and again, this is something you have to be careful with, if you do feel comfortable saying that if something like this ever happens again, or if we ever hear about it again, then we're going to do something about it, that's fine. That's fine. It has to make sense, which means it should be something he understands. It shouldn't be something that, you know, what does one have to do with the other? You know, if something happens again, I'm not going to send you to school to learn when you're 18. You want to make sure he understands the connection, first of all. More like a natural consequence of you'll never be able to be home yourself with your sister, for example. Or it's going to be hard for us to trust you as much as we want to. But another thing, don't threaten something you can't stick to. And that's why, especially when it comes to teenagers, like I said before, where you're not in control, you have to be careful what you say. Even with little kids, where you are in control, you have to make sure you're saying something you could do. If it ever happens again, we're not going to take you Chol HaMoed on a trip for 3 years. Are you really not going to? Then don't say you won't, even though you could. But with a teenager, you just have to make sure, even more than that, that you could do and that you will do what you said you'll do. Now going forward, just because you asked what we should do about it, two things that I'll say for you, the parents. One is that you have to be careful in the future. You learn something. And, you know, boys and girls being together or alone, you don't want to get paranoid, but you do want to make sure that you're dealing with it responsibly. You don't want to announce your lack of trust if you don't have to. And you don't want to make people more aware of problems than they are. But you do want to be responsible. And you may have learned something about responsibility. And I think everyone in their own situation learns things over time about responsibility. And don't ignore them. So aside from what I said before about not being naive in the first place, don't ignore red flags and deal with them. It would be a shame to be stuck dealing with the same problem again and again. And the other thing, again about you, and especially with the tati-mami issue here, is that parents always have to have that unified approach when it comes to anything. It's very important for children to feel and to know and to, you know, be pretty clear that it's mommy and tati. It's not mommy against tati, and I'll work with tati and get away with it with mommy, etc. It's very important that parents are on the same page when it comes to children. If a parent sees, chas v'shulam, that the other parent is neglecting or abusive to a child, that's when sometimes it's better to side, I don't want to say it this way because it sounds bad, but you side with a child instead of teaming up with mommy against the child, or teaming up with tati against the child. There are very many children who are resentful by the fact that, you know, when this one was abusing me, the other one wasn't there for me. And in the name of Shulam Bayis, you don't want to abuse kids. And people make that mistake, not because they believe in it, but because they don't realize they have a choice, and they're afraid. But in general, when it comes to a chinuch decision, or it comes to a chinuch situation, tati and mami are on the same page. And it would be a mistake to say, you know what, to let a child know, this is between me and you, and tati doesn't understand, mami doesn't understand. And you give mixed messages that definitely make it harder for a child to do the right thing and to take it seriously. And tati and mami should be very loving, very loving, very accepting to a child that is struggling, especially a struggling teen, like we started off with. Very, very, very loving and very accepting, which means any kind of discipline, any kind of punishment, and any kind of whatever you're going to implement over here should never, ever detract from how you feel or how you express your love and warmth to a child like this. On the contrary, these are the children that need it most, like we started off with. So let me just summarize. You always want to make sure that you're verifying what happened before you jump. And you also want to make sure that you're not being naive if you can't verify something. You want to make sure that a child like this feels very understood and loved and good about the whatever parts he did do right, and realize your position with him before jumping and trying to attack him if it's not going to work anyway. And practically speaking, deal with it responsibly. Deal with it responsibly. Don't overreact. Not with him, not with her, not with yourselves. And hopefully when Tati Mami are together and they have that Umar Luham, to know how to show the right amount of love and care for a Bukhar and for all children, especially those that are struggling, this will help us see a lot of nachas from each and every one of them.